From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Much of our budget is very much set in stone and not flexible. So the burden of not having a state budget put in place now is falling on a smaller group of providers.
Right now, we have enough revenue to last for about another month. If the budget isn't made, we're going to have to lay off about 200 staff.
We have one agency in southern Illinois that serves four counties that closed their doors Friday.
We're operating, as others have said, on our cash reserves. We're operating on lines of credit. But again, that cannot go on indefinitely.
In fact, I would best describe this as a death march. Now, I'm not trying to be melodramatic here. I'm just simply observing the agencies across the state that I'm familiar with of how they are attempting to survive and very close to death.
The people that we're here to talk about are people that can't talk for themselves. And I can't say strong enough. If even it was your family member, I wish that you could know the pain that we see and frankly, the blood that is going to be on the sidewalks should this go on another month.
That's John Markley, the CEO of Centerstone, a substance abuse and mental illness nonprofit, which treats about 17,000 people around the state, mentioning blood on the sidewalks. He was just one of a number of people from human service groups who this week were saying, hey, the state budget thing is affecting us. We're not getting money. And if we don't get it soon, it's going to mean big problems for the human services sector around the state of Illinois. We'll be talking about that and other issues affecting Illinois government on this week's State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS, always away, having returned from his secret summer sabbatical. Brian Mackey, State House reporter for WUIS at Illinois Public Radio. Amanda Venicky, State House bureau chief for WUIS at Illinois Public Radio. And joining us on a rare visit now, and we always are glad to have him, Chris Mooney, head of the Institute for Government and Public Affairs at the U of I.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure, Bill.
And we'll start social service agencies and groups, Brian Mackey, saying there's going to be blood on the sidewalks. That sounds like they're starting to get a little desperate for some revenue from the state to help out their budgets.
Yeah, this was a very dramatic 70 minutes long news conference. I guess that's not really accurate to say a dramatic news conference, but there were some dramatic statements made in a very long news conference as group after group got up there to say that they are potentially going to have to shut their doors. Some are already shutting their doors. These are groups that provide services for people with mental health problems, people with substance abuse disorders. They also operate domestic violence shelters. That's one of the things we heard. A domestic violence shelter in southern Illinois serves four counties, had to close, and referred their emergency hotline to a Chicago affiliate that's going to handle the complaints. These groups represent providers that, you know, the state has kind of worked out this system where they used to do a lot of these roles themselves. It used to be a big network of state mental hospitals, and we closed most of those and count on these outside groups now that are being starved of funds without a budget in place. And so these groups say that they're as we heard, on a death march, one of them said.
And we're on that death march, Amanda Venicky, because of a lack of a state budget, although this week we did see the Illinois Senate say we'll okay the moving of several billion dollars to be used for some social service programs. Will that help address the concerns that these groups had, Amanda Venicky?
That will help. So most really headline breaking would be Women, Infants, and Children, this, you know, federal program that helps new mothers, for example, pay for breast formula. And that's something that would stand to go away if Illinois didn't approve this. It's federal dollars that otherwise would just be sitting in the bank doing nothing if the legislature doesn't go forward and governor doesn't sign into law the authority to spend that cash. So it's actually closer even to $5 billion. But, Bill, there is a wrinkle here. Although that passed, and it was telling, it was the first time that we've had Democrats and Republicans come together. There were zero no votes when this went through the Senate. So you had cooperation, you had the good graces of the governor for this. And yet, you had, first of all, House Speaker Michael Madigan saying that, yes, the House will take it up, but that already he had said there were requests for some additional spending to be included in that, including, he said, from the governor's office. Then the governor, the next day on Thursday, had a press conference in Chicago where he said he'd heard a rumor, but this is the governor spreading the rumor, so I think it's all right to mention here on the radio, that Madigan wanted to load up and attached to this legislation money for Chicago public schools pensions. The governor said if that in fact is something that the speaker attempts, he and the, by extension, the Republican legislators who are, you know, have been agreeing with him and are kind of sort of at his command, that they would be against that. So we don't know, in fact, if that's anything that's going to happen. It could be something that trips things up. Then again, it could just remain a clean bill with roughly $5 billion of spending that would very much be helpful to these social service agencies that depend on these federal dollars. The social service agencies that some of which we heard from that just get state funds, they wouldn't be advantaged at all. They'd still be left out, you know, kind of waiting and hurting.
Well, it's this slow trickle that we watch and that we've said for weeks that would be the way it happened. We don't watch people go over a cliff anymore when it comes to budget deadlines. It's just things slowly happen and people slowly shut their doors while they're waiting on the money. But state government in some areas still functions. Certain things are required by a judge or by law to be paid out anyway. So I've heard it said, asked in jest, to what degree do we really need a state budget? Because it seems like a lot of it's getting paid for, but not all of it is getting paid for, obviously.
Well, it occurs to me, and I'll confess that I am not totally up to speed on this stuff because, as you alluded to, I just came back from almost 3 weeks, 500 miles north of here, in a cabin in the Northwoods on the shore of a lake that's part of a chain of lakes on the edge of a national forest with no Wi-Fi, no landline. So it was very nice. but it occurs to me, questions that I had coming back, and I've heard this comment too, that, well, do we really need a state budget because 80% of the money is going out? Well, it occurs to me, for example, that because of a court order, prison guards are being paid. On the other hand, how are we paying for food for the inmates? I don't think there's a court order saying, yes, you can buy food for the inmates. So that would be an issue. Salaries for state troopers are being paid. How are we paying for the gasoline to power their squad cars? There's these little things that are, in a normal world, and in all previous years, you didn't think about it because it just happened. It's, you know, it's nothing to worry about. But in this bizarro world in which we find ourselves, suddenly these are issues that need to be considered. And as you indicated, those federal funds, which should be no problem, aren't money that can be used for anything else in most cases. Like the WIC program, the state couldn't say, well, we're going to take this WIC money and we're going to use it to do something else. There are very strict federal requirements, and if you use it for something else, you get in trouble with the feds. You wind up having to pay back the money that you essentially stole, plus a penalty, plus you may get less money to help your people next time. So it's not that it has any bearing on the finances of the state per se, but it's part of this ongoing power struggle where apparently real people don't matter.
And, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, there's a couple of things that I'm seeing a problem here with. Number one, and at the deepest root, since the Magna Carta, the way the sort of Anglo-American governmental systems have been established, and in order to avoid tyranny by one part of the government or another is sort of where the legislative branch appropriates money, and no money can be spent without the legislature saying this is what the people want through their representatives. We have a system of checks and balances everybody learned about in the fourth grade where you have a judicial branch, executive branch, and a legislative branch. Right now, the way things are running, if you don't have a the way we're doing it is that the legislative branch basically doesn't matter anymore. We've got government by the judiciary, government by the executive, and that's a fundamental hiccup in the way American government works. And so that's at the philosophical level of really important impact that we need to think about. But also, without having this budget in place, it's not only the poor people who are getting screwed, and that's the way it always is, right? The poor people always get screwed. Rich people do fine. But businesses look at this and they, if they're thinking about expanding, if they're thinking about moving in or out of Illinois, they say, when you look at surveys of placement for business leaders, the tax levels, that comes down the list some way. There's a lot of other things that matter, but one thing that really matters for government is stability. They want to know what's going to happen down the road so then they can make an investment. And this is just, all bets are off. Nobody knows what's going on. How do you make business decisions in a situation like this?
Right. I mean, we hear so much about businesses. They want stability, stability, stability. There had also been calls when Governor Rauner was running for the office. He said Illinois needs an overhaul of its tax code. There wasn't as much focus as he's put now on the turnaround agenda. He didn't really talk about redistricting, for example. Now that's one of the five things he wants. It was focused on part his campaign on a redo of the tax code. There's no discussion of that, something that could, alleviate some of these budget pressures or at least change them going forward. But as you noted, Charlie, by some accounts it's 60%, some accounts it's 80%. It depends on right now there is a court ruling that says Medicaid dollars have to go out for Cook County. That hasn't been decided for downstate, but if you do assume that the courts will treat downstate as they have Cook County, it'd be 80% of the budget's already done. So it's interesting because you have this war about these kind of outside issues, and yet also Republicans, why they didn't go along, for example, with a temporary July budget was they said it would lead to out of balanced spending. And at some point, you have all these bills racking up without any real decisions being made about them. When a court mandates this is how much you've got to pay, it's not the legislature going through and saying, all right, we believe that this is a value, this is how we can retool a program. All of that has also been pushed to the side.
So tell me how I'm wrong with this statement. Seems like it's moving along, and I think, maybe I don't really think this, but for the sake of argument, seems like we'll be okay if a legislature approves $4 billion every month or something like that. If it just slowly trickles, we'll just keep managing to make ends meet and tape it up.
I guess it matters who is going to be okay in that sense, right? Is it the victim of domestic violence who tries to go to a shelter and finds a locked door? No, that person's not going to be okay. Will the state prison guard who's getting a paycheck? Well, in that sense, they might be okay. But if the prisoners don't have food to eat, as Charlie pointed out, because they can't, because eventually, I think a lot of the way this stuff is being patched up for now is vendors are used to not getting paid in a timely manner from the state of Illinois. We've talked in the past a lot about the backlog of bills. Well, that backlog is going to be ever expanding. And I think that, that's basically the agency heads have told us. We were just talking to the director of agriculture this week. State fair is coming up. And he said, the vendors that have worked at the fair, these are the people who pick up the trash and provide hay for the animals. They like the fair. They support the fair. They know that it could be a while before they get paid, but they're willing to work with us. Well, eventually businesses, corporations are, it's not going to be a wink and a nod anymore. They're actually going to want a check. And so at some point you got to imagine this is going to come to a head.
Well, and I think there's an important distinction to be made. The backlog that we've experienced in recent years and the billions of dollars is payments that are due under appropriations that have been authorized and commitments, obligations, money that has been legally obligated. Now, if there is no budget in place, there is no legal authority absent a court order or absent some continuing appropriation legislation for the state fair, for example, to pay a performer. And so it's not a matter of, well, we've got this legal contract with you and the money will pay you when we get our money. It's that we don't have authority, legal authority, to obligate the money in the first place.
Well,
maybe it's different for state fair performers, but
the performers are a little bit different.
A lot of the ongoing expenses, right. Though, my question is, if there is no budget in place and no court ruling allowing you to obligate the money, where is your legal authority to do that? So I may say, I'll accept getting paid 6 months from now, 8 months from now. But does the state have the authority to even enter into that kind of a commitment?
Well, and what I want to ask about that, this is a kind of a chicken egg thing. Where is the real fault? Is it the judges who are saying, well, you told the people to come to work and now they've worked their shifts, so I guess we have to pay them, so pay them. Is that the fault? Or is it the fault of the executive branch who's still telling people to show up to work even though they don't have appropriations in place to pay employees? I mean, prison guards, there's some special cases where, you kind of need people. There are other extenuating circumstances where you wouldn't want them to not show up. But, jobs that are a little bit less critical than that, is that the fault here? I don't know.
Well, I would lay the fault at the feet of the governor. And the reason I say that is the General Assembly sent him appropriation bills authorizing expending money. He said the money that's in here is more than we can afford. And he vetoed the whole shebang. He could just as easily have said, we really want to protect salaries for state workers, so I will use my line item veto and my reduction veto to cut everything out of what the Democrats sent me, with the exception of personal services line items and things like the retirement contribution, Social Security, that are part of the salaries. I'll veto everything else, and under the Constitution, whatever in a budget bill is not vetoed automatically becomes law. And so there'll be no question about paying the salaries, for example.
And the governor, when asked why he didn't do that, he said that's just too complicated and Republican.
It's not complicated, for God's sake.
Republicans said that they think that it is not, it shouldn't have to be his job. It's the legislature's obligation to pass a balanced budget. And that gets to this whole root of things. But in terms of, can Illinois continue to exist without this, without any sort of budget? Clearly, it's going forward largely because of these court orders. It's social service agencies. I should point out, because the show airs on many university towns, many of us, or all of us actually, are U of I employees, that higher education is one of the other big sectors that has no budget and appropriations. So you could see, right now, there are tuition dollars that come into these schools so they can continue to pay their employees and their programs. But there are times where the appropriations come straight from the state. Some of the smaller schools that maybe are more dependent on state dollars, we could begin to see that taking effect.
And even in higher education, for me, more significant than the universities is the monetary assistance program.
Right.
Grants that enable low-income kids to go to college. If there's no funding for that, what's going to happen to these students who are aspiring to get educated, better themselves, move forward, when they have no resources suddenly to go to school?
Yeah, and this whole thing stems from a question that's been puzzling me for at least a couple of months about the governor's actions here. Usually, in a situation like this, you get an chief executive, whether it be the president or a governor, who wants to force a crisis. That's how they get this done. They're humans. They need a deadline, so the chief executive will. For example, close down the parks, state employees' paychecks are coming, the schools need to get their state money so they can open up, or whatever it is. But this governor has systematically gone through, instead of the normal process that you see in these things — I'm not saying it's normal, but the common process of trying to gin up conflict and crisis — he has systematically decreased that by pushing for state workers to get paid, by signing the school budget, by just trying to temporize throughout. And this makes no sense whatsoever to me, because you're not going to get the job done. Sooner or later, the legislature and the governor are going to come together and they're going to solve this and come to a compromise and pass a budget. I mean, it has to happen. I mean, my God, we're a country of laws, right? So we've got to follow the law eventually. Why not keep that crisis? Why not keep that state payment? The state paycheck crisis by letting July 15th be the date. And then everybody goes crazy and they have a lot of controversy and they stay up all night and then they get it done. Otherwise, we're just petering this thing out. I was talking to a state rep the other day and I said, how are things going under the dome? He says, well, we don't know what's going on, but the over-under betting now is December 15th. And getting this thing done, and I just shake my head and wonder. I don't know. It's like up and down. Down is up is down. Dogs and cats getting married. The whole thing is crazy.
Well, it seems
that's
like
in the next legislation. But
I was just saying, it seems like the governor is really focused on message, and he does not want to look bad, right? The congressional right. Republicans have suffered in the last few big federal shutdowns back in the 90s, and then just a few years ago, and. I mean, yeah, that was the legislative branch. But to me, it seems like the one who gets the blame is maybe the one who wants to cut and kind of buck the status quo, perhaps. I don't know.
But no, what you're saying is exactly the point I'm trying to make. Bill Clinton came out of that smelling like rose. Why? Because he's a chief executive. He's got the bully pulpit. Everybody understands what the chief executive is. They don't know what nobody knows what the legislative branch is. It's kind of an evil cabal run by old wrinkled men, whereas the governor, I'm the governor and I got a watch and I got a wife and a Harley and I'm doing right for you, that's what he should have done. And he just didn't do it. And again, I'm baffled. I'm not saying that he's making mistakes. He's new at the job. Maybe he is. Who knows? He may have a grand scheme that we just don't know about, but I don't get it.
Well, so far it seems like kind of they're treating cancer without going to the doctor to get it looked at.
Well, that's one way of thinking about it, yeah.
What I find interesting and probably frustrating as a citizen is that we hear about these things and occasionally there's a little movement of some area of a budget, but the governor nor the legislative leaders are sitting down together. I mean, so it's hard to feel like there's a crisis when the world muddles along.
Right.
And then nobody's having a meeting to solve it.
That's because crises have to be defined. They don't just it doesn't happen. It's like when you're in a situation, you're at home, okay? There's a fire in the garbage can, sort of, somebody put a match in there and at some point somebody's got to go, "Uh-oh, we're having a fire here and we got to call the 911." But it takes somebody to say that, and the governor is generally the one that says this, as opposed to these various social service agencies that are desperately trying to get somebody to pay attention to them as they're going out of business.
Well, because for him, the crisis is the workers' comp insurance price, how much it costs a business to have workers' comp insurance. For him, the crisis is the liability that corporations and other companies face when they're sued by trial lawyers for, injuring people or something like that. That's where he, I think, has tried to define the crisis. And I guess the question is that do most voters perceive that as a big enough emergency to light a fire under their legislators' butts to try and do something about those things? From the evidence so far, the answer appears to be no. He views it a crisis. The Chamber of Commerce might view that stuff as a crisis, but and the Tribune editorial board, there's another group that views it as a crisis. But I'm not sure, there's a widespread popular movement to try and lower the cost of workers' compensation insurance.
But I would argue if you were serious about trying to resolve this thing, the leaders and the governor would sit down. And they kind of split the difference. They'd make some changes to workers' compensation, and they'd make sure that whatever changes were put in place that save money would be reflected in the rates that the business community has to pay for the insurance, because there have been savings. Now, you could argue, well, one of the savings is because there are fewer people working and they're getting paid less. Nonetheless, there are savings. Those savings have not been passed along. They've gone to pad the bottom lines of the insurance companies. That should stop. You could look at venue shopping in terms of personal injury lawsuits. There are changes you can make without throwing out the entire system as a means of compromise. And if the governor were to move away from some of his non-economic issues, term limits, redistricting, and focus on what changes can we make in workers' compensation, the Democrats would go along with it. You guys recall, how many years ago was it when the House and the Senate under Democratic control, passed legislation to limit damages and personal injury lawsuits. It was thrown out for the third time by the Supreme Court. Nonetheless, they went along with this reform for the business community. So there are things you can do if the governor would get rid of his non-economic agenda.
I think there are a lot of people who are speculating that really, from many sides, there is yet no willingness to come to an agreement. And as we've talked about, they haven't been meeting. They haven't, at least on the regular basis or all together. There have been individual meetings. For example, this week, Senate President John Cullerton and Governor Rauner did get together. Madigan said meetings are going on, but he couldn't really say when he had last had a sit down with Rauner. We don't really know where that fault lies or why that is. But I think that that is the source of frustration from the public who's noticing this, also from many rank and file members who are wondering what their leadership is doing and want there to be some sort of get together. But it clearly is, I think, because there is money being spent, there is no crisis, therefore there's no major blame game going on that's hurting any one individual at this point, that there is no effort right now to truly, truly, truly get to a widespread deal.
And we'll take a couple of minutes here in the remaining time to try to get in some notes from the field. I'll start with Chris Mooney.
Oh, well, I just spent the week in a room with 40 up-and-coming leaders from the state, a bunch of state reps, mayors, and so forth in the Edgar Fellows program, where they came together and tried to learn about commonalities among the states. And after all this craziness and this crazy old hyper-partisan situation, it really made me feel good. I think we've got promise.
Did they come up with a solution to take care of the problem?
Well, no, but there was some drinking, so that might be the start of it.
Charlie Wheeler.
Well, speaking of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, Professor J. Fred Geertz has come out with the flash index for July, and it shows that it rose marginally from what was in June. And he points out the index has been steady for more than 2 years in the range of 106 to 107 for the last 26 months. It doesn't mean the economy is expanding, but it means that it's growing at an even rate, because anything above 100 indicates economic growth. So I take that as a good sign. We're moving slowly but steadily.
And in 20 seconds, Brian Mackey.
Yeah, I just want to mention a couple of news items related to the University of Illinois, particularly Urbana-Champaign campus. The chancellor, Phyllis Wise, has decided to step back into her teaching role there. We also heard this week a federal judge has decided to allow a lawsuit by a professor who'd made some anti-Israeli comments on Twitter. They rescinded a job offer for him. He's suing. That lawsuit's going forward.
And we'll follow up on that U of I situation in coming weeks as well. That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Chris Mooney for dropping by today. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org or search out State Week in Review on iTunes U. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.